Good morning. You are listening to WFVR LP and Royalton Community Radio. This is Henry Swayze, and I am flying solo for Greenzine today. Todd is in transit, has been riding the rails. Have to check up and see whether he found some unlikely people on the rails. Today's show has got three different main pieces to it. We're going to take the first section, and we're going to talk about a book and what I learned about it with two extensive Zoom meetings that D.D. Pursehouse put together with the co-authors of that book. So a total of 5 or 6 hours of Zoom meeting. And that book is Peter Bonyard and Robert Dulett. And it's a book about cooling the planet. How we can take care of the ecosystem and cool the Earth within 20 years. The title is Cooling the Climate. And then we will move on in the second half, and we will talk with a woman that Dr. Nicholas, now I'm working from memory. Shucks. I'm going to play you some music as a lead-in for this. We'll get back and get our train on the track here. Thank you. is playing there. And we'll thank our Green Zines sponsors that make all this happen. So Solarflect, solar panel that follows the sun, and you can get one of those that stands in your yard and recharges your electric vehicle. Bale, build a local economy right here on the green and influencing the whole Upper Valley and beyond. Royal Trail Works, thank you so much for supporting us. Daniel Leibowitz also moved on from the Royalton area, but so glad to have them on board. Upper Pass Beer Company and the First Branch Coffee Company, Solarfest, that is redesigning how it can make its event draw more people. The White River Land Collaborative, right here in the First Branch Valley, Wit and Grit, and last but not least, the Can Collective. Thanks so much. So that second guest is Kimberly Nicholas, and Dr. Nicholas works with Project Drawdown and has launched a project called SHIFT, the Super High Impact Initiative for Fixing Tomorrow. It's unlocking the things that you can do to become a superhero. So we will get into the book, Cooling the Climate. And it's a semi-technical book. And I'm not going to try to cover anything like all of it, but I want to point out some of the things that I learned. To start with, forests that are in the equatorial regions have far more impact on our climate or the climate of the world than other forests do, although all forests and all green-growing plants help. The Amazon, one of those equatorial forests, the biggest one in the world, I think, Amazon Basin, is nearing a turning point. And if there isn't a turnaround from what's happening to the Amazon, we are really set up for a disastrous outcome. The collapse of the Amazon biotic pump, the process by which water rises off the Amazon, turns into raindrops, throws away heat, and the process that escapes far more easily into space, and then returns as rainfall back to the ground. It's a baling process. That rain cycle bales heat out of ground level and delivers it back to space. And without that, if the Amazon rainforest, which is rapidly being converted into things that don't work like the rainforest, palm oil plantations and cattle ranches. If that collapses and that rain cycle no longer feeds the water to make the Amazon grow, then we'll see a 2 to 2.5 degrees Celsius rise in ocean, excuse me, in climate temperatures around the world just from that one forest. And so it's a serious deal that we step up and do something about that. So that's the grand overview of what's happening there. And then what do we do to turn it around? There are many efforts, and there are links to those. There will be links to those in the show notes. There are many efforts, but the most important one is working with the indigenous people that live there so that they can take ownership of reversing that deforestation that is going on. And that takes us around to a global fix. So outside the Amazon, what's different about, say, the indigenous people in the Amazon from Americans who are living in big cities? And it's a difference of culture. And if we had one thing that we could do, we would make culture be ecology. So we would make our living and breathing and thinking and habits and so forth be based in ecology. And so what does that mean? And for an Amazonian, what does it mean? It means that they give thought to nature, that they pause and think about what their actions right now are doing. If they cut a tree, they will pause and think about that tree. And they may not have the answers, but they're attentive and they are paying attention to the reactions to their actions. And we certainly can do that in our lives. We can, instead of just charging on helter-skelter, we can pause and reflect a little bit. Even though we don't have an answer, we can ask that question. And so with that, we will go to Bird Note, which I thought nicely lined up. It's the Bird Note item is Hawaii as a model for conservation.
This is Bird Note. Sam Ohugan is the senior scientist and cultural advisor for the Nature Conservancy of Hawaii. And he's quick to tell you about how special Hawaii's ecology is.
Hawaii is an amazing place because it's a microcosm of the world. In one limited area, you have a huge number of the major biome types of the entire globe. And you can find an environmental setting in Hawaii that can support just about every living plant species.
With invasive species and climate change, Hawaii has experienced so much loss and extinction since Western colonizers arrived. But Sam believes Hawaiian culture and tradition are key to advancing conservation ecology, and has done a lot of work connecting these two worlds.
The best managed and preserved areas on Earth that remain are ones that largely retain their indigenous relationships. It's a movement that's growing, and Hawaii is kind of leading the way in that. There is growing recognition that traditional knowledge is a vital part of long-term conservation success.
Sam hopes that one day, Hawaii can be not just a microcosm of ecology, but of conservation as well.
We get to be the example of what can happen in a place if you can work the right combination of people and the natural world. People living in a place, caring for their lands from the top of the mountains above them all the way down into the depths of the sea.
For Bird Note, I'm Mark Bramhill.
Yeah, and we might listen to his little promo too. Oh, little promo didn't come with it. All right. So, going back to this point, the how you get cooling, I'll just review that one more time. That when you have green growing plants, they transpire water, they evaporate, they make cooling happen at ground level. That cooling is shifted up to the cloud level. And when it forms a cloud, it throws away that heat, and that heat then moves much more easily out to space where it is balancing the planet's temperature. If we had no atmosphere, we would be over 100 degrees below zero. So we need the greenhouse gases. We just need balances to keep them going. And we're adding greenhouse gases that don't go away. And so we are cranking up the temperature of the Earth. So there's our guest. And we will see if we can get her online. Oh dear, here we are. No, I lost her.
If you would like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, hang up and dial your operator.
All right. Ooh. Let's try that mode. Well, let's get us into a little bit of music while I get our guest online here. Sorry for the kerfuffle here. I think...
There you are. Hi, Henry.
Yes, I am not the one who usually runs the soundboard here, so I am goofing things up nicely. Anyway, we have you on the air, and it all systems seem to be go. So, let's charge right in, and... Look at your project that you've created, Shift, and what an extraordinary thing to do. And tell us a little bit about yourself and Project Drawdown, and how Shift fits into that. I certainly pulled up the Shift Super High Impact Initiative for Fixing Tomorrow, and plugged in my credentials. And said, "Here's some things you could do," and they were very helpful things. I was quite. Then I became someone else and thought that was useful too. So let's. Let's try and spell this out for our listeners.
Sure. Well, that's great to hear. I'm so glad you found the guide useful. So, hi, everyone. I'm Kimberly Nicholas. I'm a climate scientist and professor at Lund University in Sweden. I originally grew up in California. I've been here now for 15 years. And my latest project is called Shift. It's the Super High Impact Initiative for Fixing Tomorrow. We just released it last month in collaboration with Project Drawdown, which is a science-based climate solutions nonprofit based in the U.S. And what Shift does is take our research and the research of many scientific colleagues and boil down what we know from research works to move the needle on climate action. We use these five climate superpowers or roles that we developed in a study that came out in 2021 that was led by Christian Nielsen. And those roles are what we may have the option to do as citizens, as professionals, investors, consumers, and role models. So the guide asks you a few questions to start and identifies the roles that will be most relevant and have the highest impact for you, and then guides you through how to take just a handful of four or five high-impact actions in each of those roles. So the idea is... it's science-based, it focuses just on the most important actions, and it tries to make them as straightforward and easy as possible to actually take those actions in your life, because the best climate actions are the ones that you actually take and actually happen.
Yes, one might say that the best actions are the ones that you actually do now.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why I know everybody is busy and overwhelmed and there's a lot going on. So that's why we really focused in Shift on identifying and ranking the actions in order of effectiveness. So if you only have a little bit of time, you'll just see the most effective actions. You also have the option to download a guide that you can come back to and refer to and carry out the steps when you have more time. But we really tried to make it respect people's limited time and energy and help them direct that to where it will make the biggest difference.
So if you're someone that's been, I mean, people who listen to this program are taking the time to listen to the program because they care about the environment one way or another. And they have been immersed in a lot of different brews of what's going on in the climate. We just got through talking about the needing to reverse deforestation in the Amazon because of its impact on the whole world and on our own situation. So it affects everybody. Give some examples of ways that people can actually get started doing something rather than just being absorbers of information.
Yeah, it's so important to take that step into action. So you mentioned one of the two things that humanity has to do to stop climate change, and that's stop destroying nature. The other and even bigger and more essential task to actually stabilize the climate is to stop burning fossil fuels, to phase out fossil fuels. So when we succeed in doing those two things, we will stop further warming and can hopefully start to heal the damage that's already been done. But how do we actually do that in our everyday lives? That's been kind of a missing link and difficult for people to know. So that was the goal of SHIFT. As I said, we have these five superpowers, and we start with the citizen role. That's what research has identified can make the biggest difference, and that's how we engage in who we vote for in electing climate champions who will make and pass strong climate policies, which can have the absolute biggest difference, in joining groups or political parties that are pushing for strong climate action, joining peaceful protests, getting media attention for the climate crisis, and also calling your representatives directly. That is a really powerful and really underused climate action. It's extremely effective, and elected officials just do not hear enough from the ordinary, everyday people that they are elected to represent. So those are the five actions you would find under the citizen role, and those are really, really important.
Yes, the politicians, when they're working and in office, have many, many people that are paid by people who want to see things go right for their corporations, knocking on their doors and taking up their time, and they hear very little from the people who may not have a well-formulated solution, but they have a concern. They sense that they want things to be better, and making that heard is remarkably powerful.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the research shows that that is correct. So there have been studies showing that actually many politicians are aware of the climate crisis, and many of them are even concerned about it. But one of their biggest barriers to actually enacting climate policy is the false belief that their constituents don't care enough about climate action. So they really need to hear from their voters who keep them in office that climate is an issue you care about, that you vote on, that influences your vote. And then there are groups like the Environmental Voter Project, which activates people who already care about the environment and climate but are not yet consistent voters and makes them consistent voters. So getting out the vote for people who do care about climate, which is the majority of Americans, is a really important action. I just taught a course on climate science and politics here at Lund University, and one of the assignments for my students was to use the guide and take one of the actions that they're not yet taking. And several of them chose to contact their representatives, and I was really impressed by the response they got. So they were able to talk to a relevant person who was really impressed. In one case, they were talking about the urban heat island effect and reporting their personal experience of how that has changed even over their relatively young lifetime. So it's really powerful to share personal stories with elected officials. And of course, if there's a relevant bill or policy on the table, it's great to take a position on that or ask them to take a position and vote on that to support strong climate action. But even if you just want to call and say, look, I'm concerned, I care about climate, I see not enough is being done, and I want to hold you accountable to deliver on climate pledges and make the transitions we need to have this fast and fair transition away from fossil fuels, that's a really powerful action.
Yeah, I think that the demand has to come from the public in order to get change. If we don't make ourselves heard and don't take that step, then the elections don't talk about it, and the campaigning is all about things that, when you step back, may not have been very important to you at all.
Yeah, that's right. You don't have to do it alone. So you can just pick up the phone and call your elected official, and that is a really powerful action. And actually, the phone specifically calling is really powerful. But you also can have a huge influence by joining a group. So finding a climate group in your area who's already active and informed, who's already working on the issue, would love to hear from you and get your support. And there's a number of national and international groups that have local branches. So simply asking around, searching online for a climate group in your area and figuring out how you can best plug in and join them and help support their mission. And those groups, remember, need everything. They need childcare. They need food. They need a place to meet. They need someone to help with website design and accounting. So there are just a lot of roles that need to be filled and that are really, really valuable in helping push for strong climate action as a citizen.
Yes. Talk some about the value to the individual who finds other people that feel the way one does.
Yeah, it's really powerful to build community. That comes up in the shift guide under the role model action. And it's actually the first action there. So as a role model, we can inspire others. We can spark conversations. We can walk the talk by taking action ourselves and making it visible and sharing that journey, sort of warts and all, both successes and struggles, and encouraging others to walk the talk along with you. But number one there, we put building climate community, because it's so important to have a group of people that you enjoy spending time with and that make this work fun and rewarding, that you can support each other and enjoy the good times and support each other through the bad. So finding that group, which can be a climate book club, which I'm a part of and have really loved over the last years, discussing climate fiction with colleagues, for example. It can be that nonprofit group or the political party or climate group that you found as a citizen. It can be your neighbors. Another action that one of my students just took, was to convene a plant-based potluck and watch a documentary with their neighbors. So they recently moved in, and they didn't really know their neighbors. They invited people to join this event, and 13 strangers showed up and started becoming friends. And building communities like that, where you can share resources, borrow tools, help each other out in emergencies, and also make plans for, hey, you know, I see this need in our neighborhood, on our street, it needs to be safer to walk or bike, so that fewer people are going to drive cars, or so that it's possible for kids to get to school without driving their parents driving them. You can really start to tackle a lot of issues with your neighbors in a way that's incredibly powerful. So that community is just really essential to staying in this work for the long run.
Yes, that's beautiful. I think there's that's where quality of life comes from. It comes from having a community that you are feeling part of and enjoying. So let's move on to other sectors where we could do good, or other categories.
Yeah,
I haven't got your terminology right.
No worries. So we have these five roles or superpowers. After the citizen superpower comes the professional. So that's how we spend our time at work. And that can be, we have links there to Project Drawdown's great job function action guides. So if you're in procurement, or you're a lawyer, or if you're in healthcare, or a teacher, you have a special role to play in pushing for climate action and using your particular skills to help move the needle. That can be in helping your organization deliver its fair share of the Paris Agreement, so figuring out what it would mean for your company, your organization, to actually reduce emissions, both for your own organization and along the supply chain, so bringing others with you, encouraging the whole industry to move in the right direction, making sure that your policies are aligned with climate action, that there's not sort of, support on one level, but in fact actually lobbying for policies that are locking in fossil fuels when they need to be phased out. So looking over your time at work, building a green group or a climate group where you focus on action, and really focusing on these high-impact climate actions. So essentially implementing the actions from the shift guide to really focus on reducing the greenhouse gas pollution that's causing climate change as fast and fairly as possible. So understanding where that comes from and effective ways to reduce it as fast as possible at work and through the influence you have at work by the relationships you have with clients or customers or students or patients or whatever the nature of your work is. But that work is another really powerful community, and many of us spend much of our time there. So that can be a really important contribution.
Yes. Being a retired person, I get my community from things like people I rub shoulders with at Vermont or at Royalton Community Radio, and a little bit of contact with neighbors and so forth. So it's, but as you say, the normal human being isn't retired. We are.
Well, I think retired people also count as normal human beings. So, I mean, we appreciate the work you have done in the past. There's still important work for retired folks. And Bill McKibben has an incredible organization called Third Act for experienced people to join and support climate action. So that is a group targeted specifically at retired folks to effectively use their talents towards taking effective climate action. That's a really great option for those who are retired.
I was at a Vermont is proposing legislation to allow plug-and-play solar. So balcony solar, kind of, and I was at an event in Middlebury, and there were a number of people from Bill's group that were shouldering right up and taking hold and helping promote the whole concept. It was pretty neat to see them as a. As knowing one another and becoming a community of people taking action.
Oh, that's great to hear. Yeah, yeah, I love hearing examples like that where you see these actions really unfolding around you and it starts to feel more real. We know that one problem is that most Americans do care and are concerned or alarmed about climate change. But most people have the mistaken idea that other people don't care or other people aren't willing to act. So seeing people in our everyday environments, like you just mentioned at this gathering, it starts to build momentum for more action. You see others acting, you're inspired to join them, and it starts to change something that's really important, although it's hard to really to measure or understand, and that's cultural norms. That's what we expect of ourselves or think others expect of us. It's basically what you do when no one's watching, what is seen as acceptable or reasonable or the right thing to do. And we need some shifts in those in order to make this transition away from fossil fuels. So having a cultural norm of, hey, you know, you're retired, thank you so much for your workplace service, If you still have more to give, we would love you to give it to the climate movement and find a way that works for you to make use of those skills.
Yes. Do you have more sectors that...
Yeah, let's see. There's two we haven't talked about yet. So we've talked about the citizen actions and professional. Next on the list would be as an investor. So that's how we spend our money and also our time. So top on the list there is to stop giving our hard-earned money to the banks and companies that are still extracting and exploiting fossil fuels. They've had 10 years since the Paris Agreement to transition away and make plans to transition away from those fuels, and unfortunately, most of them are not doing it. So on the shift guide, it will take you to links where you can explore, okay, is my bank one of these fossil-heavy banks that is still financing and lending money to the companies that are doing Arctic drilling and tar sands and building more infrastructure? We know from research that to stabilize the climate, we're going to have to stop building fossil fuel infrastructure. We really don't have any room left in our carbon budget to build more pipelines or infrastructure. And in fact, we need to shut down existing infrastructure early, ahead of its planned lifetime, to meet our climate goals. So it really doesn't make sense to be digging ourselves deeper in the hole financially. So that's why divesting our money, so disinvesting, taking our money out of banks and investments where it's supporting fossil fuels and investing them in banks and investments that are not doing that. So that's both for your private bank. Under the workplace action, there are instructions on how to get your workplace to divest, which is even more powerful to apply to a whole company, but something that we can certainly do privately, and I've done along with many of the actions myself, is to take my money out of, in my case, it was in Bank of America, and put it into a local credit union and look over any investments that you might have or any retirement 401k or pension savings. Use the fossil-free funds tool to assess whether the investments you have are supporting fossil fuels, and if so, in consultation with the financial advisor, make the switch to a fossil-free bank and funds.
Yes, I think it's seems impenetrable to take something that's a retirement fund or something that you don't really have anything to do with, a 401k or something, and to actually use it for leverage. And I think it's so good that your guide has ways to do that, that's an effective a way to turn your sitting on the sideline into an action.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really proud of my father-in-law, my husband's father, who had retired a few years ago and switched his pension actually to fossil free. The last thing in that investment category is donating to climate charities. And that could be time or volunteering. That could be volunteering your time or making a financial donation. There are wonderful, really hardworking climate groups out there. We talked about Third Act, for example. 350.org is a great one. There's Fridays for Future. There's many others. And especially local groups, I think, can benefit the most from donations because they're probably the smallest and where your money can make the biggest difference. So if you find that great local group and you're supporting them and joining them, they could really use even a small monthly donation or your donation of time because that is really important. They're, you know, trying to make this shift against some very big and powerful interests. And the more resources that they can have, the more effective their campaigns can be.
Wow. Okay. So in wrapping this up, what are the first steps for someone to jump into this and to see if they get twigged by get their nerve endings tantalized by any of your recommendations in this app?
Well, you could go right ahead and take any of the actions we've discussed today, because those are all backed by research, and we know that they're really effective. I would love to invite your listeners to take a part of the Shift Guide, so they can find that at jointheshift.earth. I've also written about it in my newsletter on Substack, which is at wecanfixit.substack.com. So those are the places to find us online. Jointheshift.earth will take you right to the quiz and let you download a PDF with a checklist for your own personal actions. We didn't talk about the consumer actions, but I'm actually okay with that, because I think often people over-focus on consumer actions as climate actions, and usually on the wrong ones. So if you want to talk about household actions, look at flying and driving and eating less meat and using renewable energy. That's a takeaway for there. But we actually put that fourth out of the five roles, because by working together with others, by working on these bigger system changes in politics, in your workplace, in your where your money is being spent, you can have such an enormous difference. So I think these roles really go together, and I hope that they'll speak to some of your listeners, and we would love to have you as shifters. So please give the guide a try and let us know what you think.
All right. Thank you so much for leading the charge on taking action and becoming a shifter.
Thank you so much, Henry, for having me. I really appreciate it. Take care.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So we need, we have yet another guest. Let's see if this is your mic.
Check 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
My goodness.
I can hear myself.
I found it.
Nice. Good work.
That was just sheer luck. We have Ben Cohen.
Cogan.
Cogan. There. Thank you.
No problem.
Ben Cogan, who has just jumped in and taken action on something, and I thought it was kind of an example of getting engaged. And so, tell us about your activity and kind of what brought you into it. We've got, let's see how many minutes we got. We got 10 minutes, 8 minutes.
Great. I can do it in two if I need to. Thanks for having me on the show. Such short notice. I happen to be in the area and had some free time. So thanks for having me on, Henry. My name is Ben Cogan. I'm from Reusable Solutions. That's my company. Our mission is to eradicate single-use plastic and to break free from fossil fuels. And we put together programs in service of that mission, and the mission I'm here to talk about, the program I'm here to talk about today is the Can Carrier Reuse Program. Started the program in 2021 I got some pilot funds to get a program started in Burlington. And we thought that me and my friend Rob Van Denabiel from Eco-Friendly Beer Drinker, he actually had a program to reuse can carriers in the Massachusetts area. I met him on like a Massachusetts Zero Waste Facebook group. And I see these, for those of you guys, the guys that don't know what I'm talking about. Do you know what I'm talking about, these can carriers?
Yeah, I think they're the things that seals get their noses stuck in and
well, close. So there was these old ones that like everyone remembers, like these like everybody remembers like the plastic film ones, like dolphins like would get their nose caught in, and like there was some kind of campaign. I'd be curious to hear the history of it. Like how does everybody know this, right? Like fish would get caught in it and they would cut them with scissors. So fish, we weren't solving the problem of getting rid of them, but we were making it like slightly better. So
right,
fish didn't get caught
right
in it.
It was dealing with humanity for nature.
Yes. Yeah. And so, so these ones are kind of a harder plastic that have become ubiquitous in the beer industry in the last like 5 or 6 years. When everyone started going to cans, it was a way to package them so you could see the labeling pretty clearly, and it just goes on the tops of beers and you can carry them. I don't love them. I think it would be better if you could fit your whole hand in there to grab them. Like getting 4 pounds of beer on like one or two fingers, like it's not the best. But however, we have this problem, right? Is that these can carriers, they cannot be, they can't be recycled, but they can be reused. They can't be recycled through traditional methods, but they can be, like, you know, we've all heard the three R's, right? I'm going to test you. What are the three R's, Henry?
We have reuse and reduce and
recycle. Yeah,
there we are.
Yeah, that's the last one. And so recycling is flawed. A lot of it is sort of pushed by the plastics industry back in, I don't know, the 80s or like 70s, 80s, where they knew that plastic couldn't really be recycled or reused. And so they just, like, they pretended that recycling was a way to fix this problem. It's not, but I'm not going to dwell on that too much. I want to try to find, like, talk about solutions to the problem, like, today. And so this can carrier program, we started in 2021. They actually can be reused, which is pretty cool. I should have brought some in, but this is all very last minute. I have, like, you know, 2,000 in my car, but my car's down the street. Make a really great sound. Do you have any beer here? No beer in the studio?
We don't allow beer in the studio.
Okay.
Might get into the soundboard.
Gotcha. Anyways, it makes it like a click sound when you pull them in or you take them off. It's just a great sound effect. That's all I was trying to say. Is anyway, so these can carriers, they can be reused. And so we started this program to reuse them. The thing is, you have to collect them. So you can collect them from stores throughout the state. Right now, there are 6 stores. The Royalton Food Co-op is not one of them right now, but if I would love for them to join, so they can definitely call me anytime to talk about the program. We've talked about it before. But there's 6 places throughout the state that you can drop them off. So you have the Middlebury Food Co-op in Middlebury, Morrisville Food Co-op in Morrisville, and then the Upper Valley, there's 3 places, the Lebanon Food Co-op, all the co-op food stores, Lebanon, White River Junction, and Hanover. And those are all the, and then the other one is the Montpelier Hunger Mountain Food Co-op. You can drop off the can carriers at any one of those locations. And then what will happen from there is that either me or one of our partners will come pick them up. I sort them. And then I give them, and then I sell them, I get them washed, and then I sell them back to the brewers for a discount. And that way, it's like we have this closed loop system that's actually working. And then the ones we can't reuse, there is a place in Georgia, Vermont, where if you bring them separately, the problem is when you bring them to a MRF, what do you do for trash, Henry? Let's start with that. What's your trash look like?
So my trash... some of it gets composted, the things that are compostable.
Do you do it like at home, or do you have a place you bring it to?
I do my own composting.
Cool.
And then recycling goes into the recycling, Vermont recycling stream.
Mm-hmm. Do you bring it to a transfer station, or does it someone pick it up from you?
Yeah, well, I live 2 places. In Burlington, the city of Burlington picks it up. When I'm in Tunbridge, I take it to a transfer station.
Gotcha. At the transfer station, is it like zero sort, do you separate it into different
streams? No, it's zero sort.
Gotcha. So that's the problem with the can carriers, is that when it's zero sort,
they're trash.
What's interesting is that it's
landfill.
Like zero. It's Casella says zero sort for you, but for them, it's lots of sort.
Right.
And so
they're throwing away an awful lot of, they're putting it in the landfill, a whole lot of things that are.
Because they can't separate them profitably. That's the problem, right? And so the thing is with the can carrier program, which is they're source separated. So they're already separated. So if they're already separated, I bring it to a transfer station up in Georgia, and they have a buyer for this material, and they will actually get it recycled because they have a buyer for it. And that's kind of the way the program works.
We did a program just recently on recycling styrofoam.
Mm. Tell me about it.
So that was very similar thing. There are people who are having styrofoam set aside at the recycling centers or the transfer centers. And then they're picking that up, and it goes to someone that densifies it, that makes it into transportable blocks, and then it goes back to styrene board manufacturers who remake it into insulating board.
Okay, those are pretty useful, especially this time of year.
Yeah. We need just make it happen really quick rather than having to move it around so much right now. The densifiers aren't in enough places.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, anyways, let me know. If you have any questions about the program?
So how did you get into this? So we've just finished this segment on how does one get involved?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to you?
Well, I don't know if I can tell the story in the time we have, but I'm going to try. You can cut me off. Tell me when. Give me a little bit of a warning. This story is kind of a bit of a long one. I started in. Okay, I can do it. 2 minutes. I started in New York City. I lived in New York City for a while, and I always wanted to do something about climate change. I didn't know. I knew it was a problem. We're talking like 2016, 2017. I didn't really know what to do. And my wife recommended this book to me by Naomi Klein called Capitalism Versus the Environment. This Changes Everything. And I read that and I was like, how do I get involved? And I want to do something. My big takeaway from the book is one, Bill McKibben. That was like a big takeaway. 350.org and Sierra Club. Those are good ways to get involved. And that sort of led me to trying to figure out ways to deal with plastic waste and climate change and get involved from both the government part. I'm sort of down on that part. That part is like really disheartening and takes a while. I'm sort of more focused on the business part of it. How do you get consumers and businesses to make the industry more sustainable? And so, that's more or less the short version of my story.
Okay. So you grabbed hold of a corner and keep gnawing on it until you got there.
Yeah, that's I'm going to start using that. I like that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to go out with that piece of music and we'll thank our sponsors once again. So you've been listening to Green Zine, and we want to thank SolarFlect and Bale, Royal Trail Works, Daniel Leibowitz, Upper Pass Beer Company, First Branch Coffee Company, SolarFest, White River Land Collaborative, Wit and Grit, and the Yes We Can Collective. Right up your alley, Ben.
I definitely got to talk to them.
Okay. You got to get into supermarkets.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love that. Yeah. Hannaford's, we're talking to you.
Yeah. Here, I shop at Hannaford's. You pay attention, Hannaford. Okay. Bye-bye. We'll see you all next week. Todd will be back to take care of the faux pas on running the board.